Mental Health Monday Marathon. Tackling the stigma.
This next part of the show is based around young people and young person's mental health. So we've got three guests in the studio who are all young people. Let's welcome to the studio Craig, Jess and Siobhan. Craig, it's great to see you. Thank you for your time. Jess, thank you for coming on as well. And Siobhan, thank you for your time today. Really appreciate you coming on the programme. Craig, where are you at as a young man when it comes to your own mental health?
What, where am I at on, like, a scale kind of thing?
Yeah.
I'd say about 8. Like, things have been going pretty well for me the last few months. So, but the whole thing about mental health, it can be up one day, it could be down the next. So it's about trying to balance yourself and keeping yourself active.
So what sort of issues have you faced in day-to-day life then?
Anxiety and depression, like, there have been times where I've had it really bad, where it'll affect me, like, just going out, going to the shops or cleaning up, just a little motivation, and it takes a while. I think the longer you suffer with mental health, the harder it is to actually find that motivation to get up and do something.
So how old are you now?
I'm 24.
And how old were you when you first thought something's not quite right here, or there may be something that feels a little bit different about me to maybe people who you have perceptions of in your friends groups?
So when I first started, it was when I was at school, so it was about, well, it must have been about 12, and it lasted for about 2 years. Like, I wouldn't say much. I'd come home from school and should be like, how's your day been? Really respond. My mum kind of took control of the situation and got other people in, such as the council, the police, people from the hospital, and they asked me what I wanted to do, and we looked at options, and I picked a different option than mainstream school, and I thought, you know, it'd already been 2 years. I couldn't leave it any longer. So I thought, now is the time, really.
So when you first sort of had depression, anxiety issues as well, did either you, your family members first consider that actually that was, you know, that's what it's like growing up? That, you know, it was about, you know, hitting puberty and, you know, all those things that come with, you know, growing into adulthood. Did you associate it with that, or did you know it was something else?
I knew it was something else because I was getting bullied at school, and like my parents knew, like, that there was stuff going on. I don't think we realised, like, how, I'm not saying it was like absolutely awful, but like how bad it was and how bad it actually did affect me. I look back now, and I think to myself, like, it affected me more than I've actually realised.
And in terms of those that journey that you took, what was that journey, and how did that differ to the journey that you would otherwise have taken if you'd carried on in the same school?
It was hard. It was very like isolated, like in the school. Before I stopped going to school, I struggled to fit in, like. Other lads were having like different conversations or found it easy getting on with girls and stuff like that. Whereas for me, it was like I said, just very difficult to like fit in and just be in with that crowd. So I kind of stuck with a couple of people who I felt were comfortable with, you know what I mean? You can have a decent conversation, but like anyone else, I would just struggle getting on with.
But now you say you're an 8 out of 10. So that, I think 8 out of 10, coming from that point of view, seems like a pretty high number, that you feel like you're doing all right in comparison.
It is. It's because I've become an adult, you say, and I've took charge of my own life. You know, I've made my own decisions. There's been things where that I haven't gone my way or didn't like or disagree with or whatever, and I've kind of just moved on for that and focus on all the positives, what I enjoy and what I want to do, and spending it with the people I enjoy being around.
That's great. Craig, thank you for sharing that story. Let's bring Jess in. Hi, Jess.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Do you like our radio studio?
Yeah, it's better.
She said off there that it was better than a different radio studio, but I'm not going to mention which one. Just where are you at now? I'll ask you the same question I asked Craig. Where are you at now with your mental health?
Understanding my mental health, I'm at, I'd say, 7 or 8. But other people understanding my mental health, I'd say about 6.
Just tell us where you're coming from a mental health point of view. What's your story?
When I was about, I'd say I was about 10, 12, I was a hyperactive kid. And it wasn't that I was hyperactive, it was like there was something different about me. And I only realised that there was something different about myself when I was about 14, when I was doing things that a 10-year-old would do. But I needed to mature, but I couldn't mature. Then when I was about 16, they queried ADHD and dyslexia, and the school said I didn't have it. But then since I've been diagnosed with both of them.
Oh, wow. So you went for the first test, or the first time you were asked for a diagnosis, the school said no. Presumably that was quite difficult at the time because you were hoping for a diagnosis because it would give you a sense of explanation, if you like.
Yeah, it's because my brother's diagnosed ADHD as well. So looking at him, to me, we were both completely different. But they just said, no, now I've been diagnosed with it.
How helpful is a diagnosis? Once you get a diagnosis, once you've got some call it a label or a diagnosis, once you know what it is that helpful? Does that help you move forward and find your own path?
It's like, to me, it's like, it was before I was diagnosed, it was like, why am I doing these things? Why can't I stop doing these things? But now it's like, I know why I'm doing these things and I've got to manage it to stop.
And you suggested as well before that one of the issues now, it's about other people understanding it as well. Is that like an ongoing conversation you have with the world about who you are?
Yeah, because there's these things about too much sugar. ADHD is just a too much sugar diet. But really it's not. It's a lack of dopamine in your brain.
Presumably you had all that going up. She's just badly behaved.
Yeah. Why can't you just sit there and do your work? I wanted to do my work, but I couldn't do my work.
And do you think that set you back in terms of where you are now? Or do you think you're now playing maybe catch up with other people because you were waiting on that diagnosis and the help that could have come with
I'm
it?
I'm trying to catch up at the minute. But I think back, I could have... School just wasn't for me. So if I'd have went somewhere different to school to get my education, maybe I might have got the 2 years that I'm behind now. But
and what are your hopes? What are your dreams? What are your aspirations for the future?
I want to own my own hotel run by disabled people.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic idea. Jess, we wish you all the best in that.
Thank you for sharing
that story as well. And let's bring Siobhan in as well. Siobhan, thank you for your time. Just tell us where you're at in terms of your own mental health at the moment.
Do you know what? I can just say I'm a solid 10 at the moment. Like, I have been since I've kind of got myself out of being down.
When did it start for you?
When I was about 13, I couldn't get along with people. I couldn't get into groups. I couldn't really do anything. And a lot of, like, home problems as well. I wasn't enjoying where I was living. And going into doctors, you know, they're meant to know everything. And you go in and you know that something's wrong. And then to go in, it's just hormones. You're growing up, you know, and, you know, you're going to come out of it. And you go home and you sit there and you think, I don't know anyone who feels like this. I know that this is different. Then I went back again. Yeah, it's hormones, you know, it's just growing up. And I just knew something wasn't right. And my dad found out, like, what to do, you know. I was on a waiting list for months and months and months trying to get the right help. And I was just getting worse because I couldn't get this help. And when my dad finally, you know, he found, you know, YPASS, Young Persons Advisory Service, and I got there, I got the help that I needed, and, like, 4 or 5 years ago, I couldn't speak to anyone. I was such a shy, nervous person, and, like, I'm just so confident in everything now.
Fantastic. So it was hard working your dad, so it was your dad was fighting your cause as
yeah.
well. How frustrating was that when you were getting knockbacks, when you, as a young person, was thinking, no, there's something not quite right here, but you had medical professionals going, oh, you'll grow out of it.
It's a case because it's like, you know, listen to me, please. You know, I know that something's wrong, and you just kind of getting shrugged off. And it was only really kind of like when my dad brought it up, you know, and he kind of, like, he was so stressed out and so worried about me because he had no idea what to do. And then it was only when he finally found somewhere where I could get the help, you know, that things started kind of going on the right path.
And what was that help like? What did it look like? How did that sort of play out that puts you in a position now when you're on a straight 10 out of 10?
Oh, there's no words for it because it's just a case of when you suffer from a mental health problem, you only really seem to get help when you're at crisis point, and it shouldn't be like that. You shouldn't be so far into your mental health issue before you can get help. You know, you go on these waiting lists and you have to fit a certain criteria, and no one fits that criteria until they're at rock bottom, you know, and to go somewhere where, because YPASS is early intervention, you know, it's about getting the help that you need, whether or not you're extremely depressed or if you're worried about your exams, you know, maybe you're not doing so well in a subject or, you know, just at school. And it's just, it doesn't really matter what's going on in your life. They're there to help you.
Fantastic that you're back in the place that you want to be. What do you want to? What are your hopes and aspirations then? We've had a hotel.
Hire me, please. Well, I never really knew what I wanted to be. The only thing I've ever really wanted to be in my life is a giraffe. I can't exactly do that, can I? But having such a close relationship with, you know, the staff members at YPASS and, you know, just talking to them because I've just gone through sending off my uni application and I sat down with one of the staff members there and she said, well, I think you're pretty good at, you know, what we do here. And when she, you know, discussed about social work and that, and I said, you know what, I actually want to go into social work at university. So that's what I've applied to do.
There you go. Fantastic stuff. Thank you for your time today. Really appreciate you coming on. Siobhan, before that Jess, before that Craig. Guys, all of you, thank you for coming on and sharing your stories on Radio City Talk and Mental Health Monday's Marathon. It's Radio City Talk. We'll continue the conversation next.
Tackling the stigma. Mental Health Monday Marathon on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Yeah, just gone 4:30. My name's Mick Coyle. It's the Mental Health Monday Marathon. We're on air until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's Tuesday morning because we're doing a 24-hour mental health show. We're talking to people who are affected by negative mental health. We're talking to people who work within the medical, the mental health field, either from a medical point of view or from different walks of life as well. So we've got some really interesting guests lined up between now and 10 o'clock tonight. Pete Price is on at 10 o'clock tonight as well. He's doing a phone-in. You can be part of that. We'll tell you how you can get involved as well. A little bit earlier on, we heard from some young people and some of their experiences. We're going to speak to now parents who have got experiences of dealing with children who have mental health issues and how that works and how they work together to try and basically make that child life as straightforward as possible, but also to create that community of parents who can work together to make sure that they have the best practice, they've got the best ideas and that sense of, I guess, mental well-being from their own point of view as well. Guys, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thank you.
What could be some of the challenges from a parental point of view when it comes to young people and their own mental health concerns? Because I guess from an adult point of view, you look at that child and you think, I want to provide as happy and as safe as an environment as I can. And often when it's a mental health concern, it's not something that's instantly visible, maybe a lack of understanding. How do you win that particular battle? That's a big question, isn't it? I've really thrown that out there.
A very long question. I think it's devastating when your child's diagnosed with a mental health condition and the first thing you do is wonder if you've done anything wrong. You know, has it been your fault that they have developed this condition? And then it's just there's just a feeling of helplessness, hopelessness. When it's a physical condition, we all know more or less what we're going to do. You know, if they've got a temperature, we give them a bit of paracetamol. You know, if they fall over, we'll, you know, bathe the wound and put a plaster on. But what do you do for mental health? Nobody has ever told a parent how they look after a child with mental health issues. And that's the biggest concern. So really, it's about enabling parents to support their children. And, you know, my child went through CAMHS and through Fresh CAMHS, and she was seen by a practitioner, and we were on a program which was called Systemic Family Practice, which meant I was involved in that CAMHS journey with her. And, you know, I can't speak highly enough both of Sam, our practitioner, and the fact that I learned so much as I was able to go home. You know, we had an hour with Sam, but then the other 167 hours in the week, we didn't have Sam. It was me. It was the family. So I had to learn what to do. I had to learn that, you know, an anxiety attack wasn't the end of the world. She was going to get through it. And I had to learn that, you know, to help her to breathe through that attack and to help her believe that things would get better. But I could only do that because I'd learnt it myself.
It's so interesting that a child will go through an experience when it comes to their own mental health, but actually it's about that environment around them, that a child in their own regard don't just exist on their own now. They have a family surrounding. They have people around them as well. It's really interesting here that actually the family being part of that, or people designated within the family to be part of that, helps that child and also helps the family, because I guess gives you a greater sense of understanding of what your child might be going through.
Absolutely. And, you know, the reality is that, you know, mental health of a child affects the entire family, whether that be having to reorganize how you run your family, because your child might not be coping with school, might need time out of school, or it might be that, you know, they're struggling to manage certain situations, that you need to, you know, organize your family in a different way. And I think that's something that very often people don't really have to stop and think about, that, you know, your entire world changes if you're going to try and make things right for your child.
In terms of that, I mean, is that something which is easy to get your head around? Once that sort of advice is there, do you think, right, I'm empowered by that advice, I can kind of do something with that advice? Or does it take you a bit of time to fully understand what it is that you've got to do and how you're going to play your role within that sort of recovery?
It does take you a long time, because it's all about adapting. And as, you know, as was being said just before, you have to change the way you do things. So that takes a lot of time to be able to adapt to. And, you know, sometimes we have behaviours that we're not aware of, and we're not aware that our behaviours might be affecting our children. So, you know, an example could be, you know, during a session, my daughter had quite a severe anxiety attack. And obviously, when you see your child suffering, the first thing you want to do is give them a hug. And she didn't want to be touched. And, you know, our practitioner said to us, do you always feel you need to hug her when she's like this? And, you know, sort of the penny dropped. Mm. Well, actually, I'm probably making her worse. So, you know, you're learning small things that you used to do and that you want to do, but really you've got to think, hold on, is that the right thing for her at this time? So it's massive. It affects all parts of your life, really.
And in going through this process, do you get a greater sense of understanding of your child through that? Do you get a sense of the child that you're looking after, that you're caring for, that you know more about them, because you then have the understanding maybe a little bit more about how they view the world and how the world is maybe viewing them?
I think that's exactly what you're hoping for, you know, and I think sometimes that works better than others. But, yeah, I think that the more that you know, undertake work with your child, and, you know, you make time in the week to sit with them and try and give them an opportunity in a safe place. You know, sometimes they want to talk and sometimes they don't. It's about respecting, you know, what's coming from them so much. But, yeah, hopefully, you know, that's exactly what you're aiming for, is that by the end of it, you have a better understanding of what they're going through and what they want from you.
And do you still get those moments of, you know, pure joy that you would get from children being around a household, you know, kids that react to certain things in certain ways as well? Or, you know, or is it a tough slog throughout? How does it play out?
No, absolutely. There are still light moments, and there are still, you know, huge moments of laughter and everything else.
Same in your house?
Oh, definitely, yes. You know, I think the communication has greatly improved in our house, and, you know, and my daughter can come to me and say, "Mum, I'm having a really good day today." And, you know, and we laugh and we dance in the kitchen and, you know, we do things that are joyful. It's not all sadness and despair. But you've just got to be aware that there are times when your child is going to struggle a lot more than maybe other children will struggle. And you've got to be aware of that and you've got to be able to read the signs.
Do you ever speak to other parents or parents of friends or your children's friends to sort of get an understanding about if they were to visit, if they were to go around, that they might act in a certain way? Have you found yourself becoming advocates of, you know, issuing, you know, advice based on the training that you've received?
Well, most definitely. And that's part of the reason why we started the Fresh Plus group, which is it's a parent participation group for Fresh CAMHS. And I think we were asked to present at a conference last year just to talk to professionals and people involved with young people about being a parent of a child with mental health difficulties. And I think just sitting preparing the conference, it gave us an opportunity to talk about experiences we've had, which possibly we'd never dared talk about with anyone before because of the fear of, you know, you're going to be stigmatised as a bad parent or, you know, there are things that, you know, are really quite upsetting to talk about. But to be able to talk about those things with other people going through the same situations, we found a huge benefit. And that's why we decided to start running parent support group forums where we're just inviting people to come along. And it's a safe place where you can just talk, because we've got to remember that parents and carers have to look after their own mental health as well. You know, you're not just looking after your child, you've got to look after yourself as well so that you can look after your child.
I was going to say, the people who step in the door then, are they the sorts of people who are of that mindset where they're thinking, OK, my child's in this position, but I'm aware that by my child being in that position, I place myself in this position. So therefore, if I can find like-minded individuals, I can put myself in the best possible place to prepare for what life is going to throw at me for the next 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely, yeah, because I think that's the big thing that we actually, preparing for this conference, as Katya said, you know, got out of it was actually we have people that you can text at 11 o'clock at night and they get it when you're having that moment when you just really, really need to just speak to somebody that understands what you're feeling. And what we really hope is that, as well as, you know, a bit like the idea of like the therapy and where you learn to manage things for your child in between, we run the sessions every 2 weeks, but our hope is that gradually parents will make connections through those forums and that they will actually develop friendships that will see them through, you know, and they'll have somebody at 11 o'clock at night where they can text or phone, you know, and somebody there that gets it. And the big thing is about not feeling judged.
Do you have a fresh group on, is it on WhatsApp or on Facebook messages and things like that, where you can fire messages out, get the support messages coming back in?
Yeah, we do have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter page as well. We are quite very much in our infancy, aren't we?
And
we're, you know, doing as much as we can to sort of get the message out there to people who are on the waiting list for Fresh CAMHS or with Fresh CAMHS, that, you know, we're there to offer, you know, an ear, really.
And are you open for new members?
Definitely.
If people want to find out more information, if people want to find out more information about the work that you're doing, where can they go?
They
can go to at Fresh Plus Group, either on Twitter or on Facebook.
At Fresh Plus Group on Twitter or on Facebook.
Yes.
Brilliant stuff. Guys, thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing your story. And thanks for being part of the Mental Health Monday Marathon. We really appreciate you coming on the programme and being so honest as well about your experiences.
Thank you.
It's Radio City Talk. We'll continue the conversation in a few moments' time. I'm going to speak to Chris Porter from the Young Persons Advisory Service. He works particularly around LGBTQ plus users as well. So we're going to speak to him in a couple of moments here on Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday Marathon with Mick Coyle on Radio City Talk.
Gone 4:45. My name's Mick Coyle. We're talking mental health. And for this part of the show, this part of the marathon, we've been talking about mental health in young people. At the top of the hour, we were joined by three young people. We've just been hearing from parents of young people who have been suffering with mental health problems, who are suffering from mental health problems and are going through the CAMHS system, if you like. That's Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. Just so you know, that phrase has been mentioned quite a few times. Joined on the programme now by Chris Porter. Chris, great to see you. From YPASS, the Young Persons Advisory Service. And you are the sports service lead for LGBTQ+.
I am indeed, yes. Yeah, it's important.
Tell us about Q+, by the way.
Okay. So straight on, the Q+. So Q, we tend to use that to mean questioning, because a lot of young people, and indeed adults, don't actually know their sexual orientation or gender identity. So it is a bit of a journey for a lot of people. And the plus also kind of relates to that a little bit as well. There's lots of sexual orientations and gender identity labels that don't necessarily fit into the LGBT. So there might be, I don't know if you've ever heard of pansexual before.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so pansexual's kind of, it elaborates a bit on bisexual. So bi meaning two and pan meaning all. So essentially what a person might be saying if they identify as pansexual is that they can be attracted to someone regardless of their gender identity. So it doesn't matter if they're male, female, non-binary, something else if they don't identify in the kind of rigid form. So people will say that a little bit more these days. Wow. Instead of bisexual.
There's been a lot of stuff in the news about this in sort of recent months about schools' policies on gender and yeah. school uniforms and all that kind of stuff. But presumably the stuff that you've been doing has been going on and you've been seeing these sort of issues play out, or issues as a result of this playing out on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. I think talking about mental health, a lot of these things start in school and sometimes end in school. There's no real clear guidance out there nationally for schools. If there was, I think support would be a bit more robust. So some schools are a lot more supportive than others of their young people. Some people have really inclusive uniform kind of policies, and some people have very rigid ones. And if we think about gendered spaces and kind of gendered activities, certain sports, you know, some people will say, oh, that's just for boys or that's for girls. That can become problematic as well. So it is important that, I suppose, that schools and staff are kind of aware that these are becoming more and more important issues for young people, and they just want to be accepted for who they are and be allowed to explore themselves a little bit. So, yeah, I think that's where a lot of the issues happen sometimes. Schools are getting better at challenging these things. At the end of the day, all schools should have an anti-bullying policy. Within that policy should cover LGBT identities.
So do you get a sense that the young people that you speak to in regard to or be from the LGBTQ plus group, is it an internal thing that they're dealing with because it's something they're trying to get their head around before they sort of step out into society? Or is it about how they fear society perceives them as individuals as a result of the person that they are?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. It's kind of all those things and others as well. I suppose like most young people or most people, we all kind of have our own insecurities and uncertainties about ourselves. I think when you're young, you don't really want to share those things. You're not really sure how they're going to pan out. And, you know, you hear things like it's only a phase. So sometimes you might want to believe that it's only a phase and that it'll all go away. But then after a year or 2 years of not dealing with it, it becomes a mental health problem. And that becomes an issue for us. So or certainly that's why we start working with young people. And I think talking of schools, I mean, we hear the word gay used a lot. Negatively, really. No one ever really says, like, oh, that Liverpool win over Man City the other day, that was really gay, wasn't it? Nobody says it in a positive way, like, oh, that was boss. It's always a negative thing. And if you're struggling with your sexual orientation and you're hearing gay being used in a negative way constantly throughout school, then you're going to start to internalise a little bit and think, oh, there's something wrong with me because gay means wrong and I think I might be gay.
And in terms of if people step into one of the hubs for Young Persons Advisory Service, can they ask specifically to speak to you or one of your team, or is that something which, you know, as part of the assessment might think, well, actually Chris might be the person and the best person for you to speak to?
They can, yeah, they can. I mean, we're quite relaxed and informal. I think some of the young people earlier were alluding to kind of our approach to things is we want it to be early intervention, but we also want it to feel like we're part of their community and want to support them. So young people can self-refer. You know, they can turn up and ask for a referral. It can be done via the official, you know, routes. So if you go online and look at the website, you can see the different ways of referring. Just asking to speak to us and we will try and book you in, you know, as soon as possible. Sometimes I had a 12-year-old phone me the other day and just asking for advice over the phone, which doesn't often happen, but sometimes people will literally pick up the phone and just have a consultation straight away. We'll fit you in as soon as possible because it's really important for us.
And how brilliant that, you know, that that person was able to pick up a phone because they knew that you'd answer and that you'd be able, because if that phone number wasn't there, would they have turned somewhere else? Would they internalise that? Could that have been a problem that would have come down further down the line?
Luckily, actually, it was the young person that said we had been into the school at some point and delivered some LGBT awareness sessions, and literally would have taken one of her cards, because I throw out loads of my cards, you know, and to say, take one of those. Might not be for you, it might be for a friend or a family member. And that's how they got in contact. And I was like, I was really surprised. And I said to them, you know, they've done really amazing to be able to do that, because I certainly wouldn't have had the confidence to pick up the phone at that age and ask for some support. So that was quite cool.
Yeah, and you always presume at the end of those assemblies when you go, if you'd like any further information, that no one's going to pay any attention.
Exactly,
but that young person absolutely did.
He
obviously made a connection with them. Chris, thank you for sharing your story as part of the Mental Health Monday Marathon. And let's bring Ben Samata back onto the programme. Ben was with us a few months ago because he was getting him involved in an ADHD Foundation conference taking place in Liverpool. He's 17 years of age and he's living with ADHD. Ben, it's great to see you again.
Yeah, you too.
How was the conference, by the way? How many people did you end up speaking in front of?
I don't want to think about that by any means. I think it was 400 or 500 in the end.
Wow.
No, it went really, really well. Really, really well. Like a really positive reception, and people were really like afterwards coming up to me and like, you did a good job.
So excellent stuff. Now, in terms of your own ADHD at the moment, when you were last on the programme, you told me about sort of what life was like as when you were growing up, about how when you'd sit in a group, in a reading session in the class, that you'd be running around the outside thinking, why is nobody else running around the outside as well? Now you're 17. How does it play out in everyday life?
As you get older, you obviously learn to manage your ADHD symptoms a little bit better. So you learn to have a bit more control of yourself and learn, like, when certain things are appropriate and certain things aren't. But you still get like a, rather than showing a more outwards like show of ADHD, it's more internal and at home. Like at the moment, my ADHD isn't getting me in trouble because I'm like overactive in class. It's when I get home, like I'll forget to do like certain things, and then I'll go to school and that'll kind of build like forgetting to do homeworks and stuff. So as you get older, like you learn to manage some symptoms, but then obviously some new things will pop up. And yeah,
and in terms of medication,
yeah,
I understand that's an issue which you've been sort of thinking long and hard about. It is that based around a type of medication, or is it a case of are you going to medicate or not?
I'm not sure whether I want to be on medication or if I want to be off it, because obviously the benefits of being on medication are absolutely massive, and you can focus better and you can engage a lot more, and obviously that's great. But it's more of a, some of the side effects aren't very nice. Like with any medication, you might get some headaches or some, you lose your appetite. So yeah. I've chosen to go back onto my meds at the moment just to help me manage school, and obviously the benefits outweigh the any negatives that could come of them. But obviously that's a personal choice, and other people might choose.
Absolutely. Is there a moment where you think, oh, that was the right choice? Is that because you got a particular thing in focus, end of year exams or anything like that?
We're doing mock exams in school at the moment, so me taking my medication is actually like, you notice the difference, like. You'll look down and you'll finish like a 12 mark question or however many marks it is, and you'll look up and you'll be like, wow, I just did that in one. It just feels, you feel completely different, feel like you can focus, and yeah, it just feels great.
Well, that's good. And it's good that you've made a decision based on your own informed choices and your own environment in terms of what you need those meds for and how those might be useful. You might change your mind about that in the future. You might not as well. So it just goes to show that actually you've sort of know so much about your own self now and your own ADHD that you feel able to make that educated judgment.
Yeah, well, you obviously as you go along, you discover things about yourself and about your ADHD that you might not have known before, and obviously that can impact on your choice whether to, you know, be on meds or maybe if you decide that education isn't for you, doing an apprenticeship, and it's a bit of a the whole thing is about self-discovery, like knowing what's best for yourself, or even asking other people what they think. It can be a really confusing time for somebody with ADHD or any other mental health issue, obviously, but just getting to know yourself, I would say, is the best thing anybody can do. Like, really thinking about, like, how does this affect me? How does it maybe affect others? And who could I speak to if I was having an issue with it?
Brilliant stuff. Thank you for your time. That's great to see you again. We'll see you again. What have you got coming up next? So you got mock exams.
Yeah. And then I've got real exams right at the end. And then I'll come back and let you know how I've done.
They should just call them like non-mock exams or un-mock exams or something like that. Just make you feel differently about them. Yeah. Thanks for your time, Ben Samata. Before that, Chris Porter from the Young Persons Advisory Service. You just type in YPAS into any search engine. It's always the top thing because they're massive, those guys.
Mental Health Monday Marathon with Mick Coyle on Radio City Talk.